Hello, everybody. It's Mickey Cole here reading tonight for the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Association. And we are reading the Olean Times Herald features and articles for Friday, January 2nd, 2026. Happy New Year, everyone. Hope you all had a safe and happy New Year coming in and that you're staying nice and toasty warm in this cold, wintry weather that we are experiencing right now. So I'm going to start with our front page. And on the front page, there are a picture of a man and a woman with her, and her name is District Attorney Ashley Smith, and she's taking an oath of office Wednesday from Judge Ronald Plotz, and her brother, Kane Smith, is holding the Bible. So there's a new district attorney in town, but a familiar face to Cattaraugus County officials. Ashley Smith took her oath of office Wednesday in the legislative chamber of the county building in Little Valley, surrounded by dozens of family, friends, and colleagues. Between my new law enforcement family and my new district attorney team that I've built, we will work to do the right thing and make sure that justice is served, and we will not let you down, Smith said minutes after being sworn in. Smith, a Republican, ran unopposed in November's general election, winning a four-year term that begins Thursday and ends December 31, 2029. She replaces former Lori P. Ryman, who did not seek re-election after being with the DA's office for 16 years. Upon reciting her oath, Smith thanked all those who supported her, encouraged her, and stood by her side during the campaign and in the weeks since the election. When I first decided to run for district attorney, I had someone tell me that when you run for public office, you never say thank you to all who support you enough, she said. The amount of support I have received has become overwhelming, and I found that statement to be absolutely true. Smith, who holds a bachelor's degree in criminal justice, said she is happy to be joining the county's law enforcement family, noting that when she first announced her candidacy nearly a year earlier, she made a vow to foster a strong relationship with the law enforcement agencies. She said it is necessary for the success of the DA's office and for justice to be served. When she decided to pursue a career in law, Smith said she didn't necessarily envision herself arguing cases in a courtroom or sitting in a private law office, but in a room full of law. Enforcement personnel with whiteboards and files working to build a case. Looking back, it's very clear it wasn't a vision. It was a dream, she said, and I'm so very happy that tomorrow that dream becomes a reality. In attendance Wednesday were several area law enforcement officials, including Nathan Root, undersheriff of Cattaraugus County, who called Smith pivotal and a go-getter. He said, with a new DA comes into office, you want someone to come in, prosecute cases, and get good results. Ashley welcomes on behalf of the sheriffs, myself, and our law enforcement family, he said. We're excited to have you there, and thank you for what you do and everything you've done. Captain Robert Blofsky of the Olean Police Department said he has only known Smith personally for several months, but added that he already knows her to be professional, organized, and dedicated. During a preliminary hearing for the case in Olean City Court that he attended, Blofsky said he noticed Smith sitting in the gallery taking notes. That's how dedicated she is and was already, he said. We feel confident that she's going to be able to lead us and take care of the victims of Cattaraugus County. Captain Jordan Haynes, chief of the detectives for Cattaraugus County, and Captain Daniel Howard with the State Bureau of Criminal Investigation also congratulated Smith and expressed they are looking forward to working with her in the coming years. County Administrator Kelly Reed said that the DA's role is not only about prosecuting cases, but about leadership, judgment, balancing accounts with the fairness, and balancing public safety with public trust. Ashley brings to this office a deep understanding of the law, a commitment to ethical decision-making, and an evident respect for the impact this work has on victims, families, and the community as a whole. said Reed, who has worked with Smith since 2020. As county administrator, I look forward to working closely with Ashley in her new role. M. Andrew Burr, chairman of the Cattaraugus County Legislature, said he had the honor of working with Smith as a county attorney and looks forward to seeing her in the DA role, citing the characteristics she possesses to be successful there. It's a great privilege to have her take on this new important role, he said. Even before she's taken office, she's done many things that have been beneficial to the county's finances and the administration of justice in Cattaraugus County. Judge Ronald D. Plotz, who administered Smith's oath of office, said that the job of the DA is not to win trials, but to do right. After working with Smith for several years, he said he's confident that the county is in good hands with her in the office. In her closing remarks, Smith said morning with her children before school, work are sometimes pure chaos, but sometimes they're pure joy. She said she's certain that the days ahead in the DA's office will also range from pure chaos to pure joy too. But on that note, and as I say to my kids in the morning, are you ready? Let's rock and roll. All right. New York to receive $212 million for rural health care from Trump administration. And there's a picture of Republican Nick Langworthy in the paper. New York State will receive $212 million from the Trump administration to support a statewide plan to improve health care access in rural areas. New York will receive the first-year award from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services under the Federal Rural Health Transformation Program to implement the state's transformative strategy to support health initiatives. U.S. Republican Nick Langworthy, our 23rd District, called the funding a historic investment authorized under H.R. 1 and the Working Families Tax Plan to strengthen rural hospitals and healthcare systems, including those in Western New York and the Southern Tier. The funding is historic and it will make a real difference for patients and providers across our community, he said. The Rural Health Transformation Program represents the largest federal investment in rural health care in American history, the congressman said. Part of what has been called the Big One, Beautiful Bill Act, passed in July, and the initiative invests $50 million over 5 years to expand access to care, improve outcomes, modernize health care delivery, and support rural providers. Rural hospitals are the backbone of health care in our communities, Langworthy said. For too long, many rural systems have faced mounting financial pressure, workforce shortages, and access challenges, forcing patients to travel farther for care. The investment helps change that. Melmet Oz, the CMS administrator, and former Republican U.S. Senator nominee in Pennsylvania, called the initial funding an extraordinary milestone for rural health in America. President Donald Trump's signature legislation, the One Big Beautiful Bill, extending sweeping tax cuts, allowing workers to deduct taxes on tips and overtime, increased the child tax credit and other initiatives. Critics of the legislature, however, point to the limit on growth of the Medicaid by nearly $900 billion over a decade, which they say will increase the number of uninsured and threaten the survival of rural hospitals in New York and across the county. Governor Kathy Hochul warned in August that the cuts imposed by the Washington Republicans would have a nearly $13 billion negative impact on New York's health care system and that approximately 1.5 million New Yorkers were projected to lose their health coverage. The funding will be distributed beginning the fiscal year of 2026 with oversight to ensure resources are used on measurable improvements for patients and providers. The State Department of Health said it will now work with CMS to finalize the details of the cooperative agreement. New York will then provide additional details to interested stakeholders around allocation of resources and funding opportunities. All New Yorkers deserve the right to have access to critical health care services regardless of where they live, Dr. James McDonald, Commissioner of the State Health Department of Health, said. To ensure the funding directly benefits rural residents across the state, New York will implement a funding distribution process that prioritizes the identified needs of rural populations. Program implementation will be supported by ongoing stakeholder engagement, including feedback from providers, tribal and faith-based organizations, local leaders, and community members to target resources where they will have the greatest impact. New York's Rural Health Transformation Plan includes four key initiatives developed with the input of nearly 170 stakeholders, organizations, and community providers. The key initiatives and their goals include the following. 1. Establish coordinated rural health partnerships between rural hospitals and healthcare organizations will enhance patient access to a wide range of providers across the care continuum to address both health and social needs. 2. Strengthen rural communities with technology-enhanced primary care. Improve rural patient access to the utilization of high-quality primary care throughout the patient-centered medical home model with the incorporation of artificial intelligence where appropriate. 3. Build a sustainable rural health care workforce. Create a self-sustained cycle of workforce development and pipeline that addresses both immediate staffing needs and long-term capacity building, ensuring New York's rural communities have continuous access to high-quality healthcare services tailored to their regional circumstances. And 4, investments in technology, innovation, cybersecurity enhancements. Expand access to care through telehealth, improving patient outcome through e-consult partnerships, increasing usable alerts in rural counties, and strengthening cybersecurity of rural facilities. All right, and let's see. The New York Department of Motor Vehicle unveils a Gold Star family license plates. The New York State Department of Motor Vehicles has unveiled the new Gold Star family license plates that enables patients, siblings, and their relatives to honor their late relatives' service and sacrifice. The plate complements the Gold Star Mother's plate that the state also offers. Qualifying family members can order the new Gold Star family plate on the DMV website. We are deeply proud to be able to offer this plate, and we are grateful to all the family members and elected officials who worked to make this day happen, said DMV Commissioner Mark J. Schroeder, who offered many plates that honor veterans and their service, but this is a long overdue addition that we are glad to now finally hear. Among those who worked hardest to see the plate come into fruition is Adam DeMarsico, who sought to honor his brother, Army Specialist Michael DeMarsico, who was killed in Afghanistan in 2012 in an improv explosive device. Adam previously lived in Massachusetts and had a Gold Star family plate there. When he came to New York, he wanted to get one here, but it was not yet available. DeMarsico worked hard to change that, and today was presented the first Gold Star family plate in recognition of his efforts. Gold Star families carry weight that never fully lifts, Adam said. By establishing these license plates, New York is making a simple, powerful promise that the lives of our fallen heroes matter and that their families will always be recognized, honored, and supported. The Gold Star Mothers organization also worked tirelessly to create the new plate. Carrie Farley, mother of Sergeant Derek J. Farley and president of the Albany chapter of Gold Star Mothers, said, "The Department of New York American Gold Star Mothers are pleased to have the Gold Star family license plate released. This allows qualified family members whose relatives lost their life in the line of duty while serving in the armed forces of the United States of America to honor and remember them." Also instrumental in the effort were State Senators Jake Ashby, Joseph Griffo, and Pete Hackum, and Assemblymember John McDonald. In addition to plates commemorating each of the branches of the military, New Yorkers can also get plates that reflect being part of the reserve of any of those branches, members of the National Guard or organizations like the American Legion, and veterans of foreign war, or what they are a veteran of a specific conflict like the Korean War, Vietnam, or the War on Terror. Informative on veterans, information on veterans' plates can be found on the DMV website. So for more information about this DMV, visit the New York State Department of Motor Vehicles website or follow the conversation online on Facebook, X, Instagram, and LinkedIn. All right. On to page 2. All right, let's see. Where do I want to go? Well, let's start with this. State, county, Seymour, and sales taxes in November, cities decline. Local sales tax receipts were mixed in November, and the state's fiscal watchdog reported. Data from the Office of the State Comptroller indicated that the counties across the region saw receipts increase in November from the year before. And while the area's two cities saw monthly declines from the year ago, receipts for the fiscal year so far have increased. Cattaraugus County sales tax receipts totaled $4.02 million in November and up 0.6% from $3.99 million in November of 2024. Since the start of the year, the county has received $48.8 million in sales tax receipts, up 5%. From $46.49 million in the first 11 months of 2024. The county budget estimated sales tax revenue in the 2025 budget across three accounts at $36.98 million, flat from 2024. The upcoming 2026 county budget calls for $39.52 million in receipts. In the city of Olean, local sales tax receipts in November totaled $419,386, down 6.4% from the $448,063 recorded in November 2024. Since the start of the city's 2025-26 budget on June 1st, the city has received $2.79 million in receipts, up 2.03% from $2.73 million during the first 6 months of the 24-25 fiscal year. The city's budget planned for $5.3 million on sales tax receipts. Salamanca City sales tax receipts also dipped in November. Receipts totaled $57,882, down 6.8% from November of 2024. However, receipts for the fiscal year are up from a year ago. Receipts since the start of the budget, April 1, totaled $561,508, up 4.82% from $535,682 in 2024. Allegheny County receipts also increased in November, and so far this year in November, receipts totaled $2.17 million, up 3.3% from $2.11 million in November 2024. Since January, receipts have totaled $27.77 million, up 4.7% from the first 11 months of 2024. The county's 2025 budget projects $28.5 million in sales tax revenue for the year, and the 2026 budget included its in its projection for $29 million. Across five counties of western New York, receipts totaled up 3.2% from $108.02 million in November 2024. Since January 1, receipts have totaled $1.32 billion, up 4.2% from $1.26 billion in the same period of 2024. Statewide sales tax in November totaled $1.97 billion, up 5.5% from the $1.86 billion in November of 2024. Since January 1, receipts totaled $22.06 billion, up 4.4% from $21.13 billion in the same period of 2024. Monthly reports are based on estimated receipts, with adjustments made to 4 months' disbursements to counties and cities every year to reflect actual receipts March, June, September, and December. Then there's a picture of a snowy, just a snow over covering the lake at Allegheny State Park at the Red House area. Alfred State students impress in 2025. So Alyssa James and John Christie were honored with the SUNY's Chancellor's Award for Student Excellence this spring. The pair were part of the 1,000 students that walked the graduation stage in May. Alfred State students continue to impress in 2025. This past year featured success in and out of the classrooms and labs, along with countless partnerships that helped those in the surrounding area. Approximately 1,000 students crossed that stage at commencement ceremonies at Alfred, while another 100 students celebrated at Northland graduation ceremonies. The college celebrated student success at the annual honors convocation, honored 19 new graduates of the Police Academy. Students gave back to others with a pair of trips to Myrtle Beach to work with Habitat for Humanity, Northland students during winter break, and Alfred students during spring. Alyssa James and John Christie were honored by the Chancellor. Four students, Kelly Cosgrove, Christian Hall, Doug Taylor, and Matthew Goodwin, earned medals of the Skills USA National Championships. Yusena Lizama Aguilar was a Norman R. McConney, Junior Award winner, and Katie Pettix received the Edward Allen Award. From working the Super Bowl to participating in the overall leadership conference, to competing in entrepreneurship competitions, to creating special memories for local Special Olympians, to working with a drinking water treatment plant in the reimagining the Village of Friendship, students not only honed their skills but helped surrounding communities. Alfred State celebrated the formation of the golf club, the 100th student club on campus, enjoyed homecoming and hot dog day celebrations, and came together to enjoy the new Alfred Cup rivalry, the football team's victory of the first ever traffic light contest. In athletic competitions, the lacrosse team won the AMCC championship, while the trap team finished sixth in the nation. A record number of new students enrolled for the 25-26 school year, and the college anticipates continued students' success. All right, let's go over here to our police reports. Belfast man charged with rape. A Belfast man faces a charge of rape, the New York State Police reported. Charles J. Gibney, 33, was charged at 3:57 p.m. Tuesday with first-degree rape intercourse with a person less than 11 years old, a Class B felony. The charge stems from an incident reported November 24th. Gibney was held pending arraignment. No further information was available. December 23, no time provided, Bryant Acosta, 38, of Salamanca, was charged with second-degree burglary, a Class C felony, third-degree coercion, and fourth-degree criminal mischief, Class A misdemeanors. The charges stem from a reported domestic incident. Acosta was held pending arraignment. December 24th, no time provided, Jeremy Buchholz, 49, of Salamanca, was arrested on a bench warrant issued out of the Cattaraugus County Superior Court. Buchholz was turned over to the Cattaraugus County Sheriff's Office. December 24th, no time provided, Daryl Gostin, 54, of Buffalo, was arrested on a bench warrant issued by the New York State Police. Gostin was held pending arraignment. On December 24th, no time provided, Jason Gates, 47, of Salamanca, was charged with endangering the welfare of a child, a Class A misdemeanor. The second-degree harassment, a violation Gates' status, was not reported. December 25th, no time provided, Patrick Hathaway, 27, of Salamanca, was arrested on a bench warrant issued out of Salamanca City Court. Hathaway was released with an appearance ticket. Saturday, no time provided, Dalton McIntyre, 23, of Fredonia, was charged with fifth-degree criminal possession of a controlled substance, a Class D felony, driving while intoxicated, operating a motor vehicle with a blood alcohol level of 0.08% or greater, and reckless driving, unclassified misdemeanors, consuming alcohol in a motor vehicle, an infraction. McIntyre was held pending arraignment. Sunday, no time provided, Miranda Baker, 28, of Buffalo, was arrested on a bench warrant issued out of Salamanca City Court. Baker was held pending arraignment. Sunday, no time provided, Patrick Mimes, 39, of Jamestown, was charged with second-degree aggravated unlicensed operation of a motor vehicle, an unclassified misdemeanor, an unsafe backing, an infraction. Mims was released with an appearance ticket. Monday, no time provided, Cameron Bray, 31, of Salamanca, was charged with fourth-degree criminal mischief, resisting arrest, and second-degree obstruction of governmental administration, Class A misdemeanors, and second-degree harassment, a violation. Bray was released with an appearance ticket. In Wellsville Police, Wednesday, no time provided, Shane M. Scott, 49, of Wellsville, was charged with criminal obstruction of breathing, a Class A misdemeanor, and second-degree harassment, a violation. The charges stem from an incident reported in Pine Street. Scott was transported to Allegheny County Jail and held in arraignment. The Cattaraugus County Sheriff's Office in Great Valley, Christopher T. Parsons, Jr., 24, of Olean, was arrested at 9:35 p.m. Wednesday on multiple warrants issued out of Cattaraugus County Court, Salamanca City Court, and Olean City Court. Parsons was turned over to the Salamanca Police Department. In Mansfield, Jesse E. Martin, 43, of Mansfield, was charged at 10:15 a.m. Thursday with first-degree criminal contempt, a Class E felony, second-degree criminal contempt, a Class A misdemeanor, and charges stem from a reported domestic incident. Martin was released under supervision of probation and is due back in court at a later date. New York State Police in Wellsville, Vance Masterson Elijah Day, 25, of Wellsville, was charged 7:09 p.m. with first-degree criminal contempt and aggravated family offense, Class E felonies. Day was held pending arraignment. Okay. Degnan swore in as acting Allegheny County District Attorney. Peter J. Degnan was sworn in on Wednesday as acting district attorney of Allegheny County, assuming the role following the election of the former DA, Ian M. Jones, to Allegheny County Court Judge. Degnan takes office with more than three decades of experience in criminal law, having served the residents of Allegheny County and surrounding communities in a variety of legal capacities. His professional background includes extensive work as a private practitioner, public defender and conflict defender, and assigned counsel administrator. Degnan also has extensive experience in prosecution and supervisory roles. Throughout his career, he has been recognized for his commitment to fairness, public safety, and the integrity of the criminal justice system. I am honored by this opportunity to serve as acting district attorney for Allegheny County. Degnan said, "I thank Judge Jones for this year's dedicated service to district attorney and wish him every success on the county court bench. I look forward to continuing the office work on behalf of victims, law enforcement, and the community," he added, "while ensuring the justice is administered fairly and professionally." As acting DA, Degnan also oversees all prosecutional functions of the office, working closely with law enforcement agencies, court personnel, and community partnerships to promote public safety and uphold the rule of law of Allegheny County. Jones, a former assistant county attorney in family court, served as the first assistant DA attorney under former DA Keith Slepp before running for DA in 2023 upon Slepp's retirement. Jones announces his intention to run for judge early in 2025. All right. Todd, the obituaries tonight, there are two. Todd R. Kopeck, Allegheny. Todd R. Kopeck, 63, passed away Monday at home. Born August 7, 1962 in Olean, he was the son of Raymond and Janet Schick Kopeck. On July 31, 1999, at St. Patrick's Church in Glen Cove, Long Island, he married Laura Perrone, who survives. Todd was a 1980 graduate of Allegheny Central School and graduated with an associate's degree from the Art Institute of Pittsburgh. He worked for many years as a graphic designer at Studio 4 East in Allegheny. After the birth of his first daughter, Alina, he immersed himself in life as dad and formed a special bond with both of his daughters. Their memories with him include walks to the Sunshine Nursery School, following their accomplishments throughout their school years, backyard camping, and s'mores with family trip to Disney World. He always loved to draw and sketch, and night sky fascinated him. Celestial events, including the moon and the stars, were a special interest, and he liked to share that with his family. He was also a Buffalo Bills fan and enjoyed spending time with his close group of friends. He leaves behind his wife, Laura, two daughters, Alina Kopeck and Stephanie Kopeck, one brother, Dana Robin Kopeck of Hotchkiss, Georgia, a nephew, Corey Kopeck, two aunts, Linda Schicht and of Smithport and Janice Rulo of Portville. No, Linda is from Smithport, I'm sorry, and Janice Rulo is from Portville, cousins and wife extended family. In addition to his parents, he was predeceased by a brother, Martin Kobeck, and friends will be received from noon to two on Sunday at the Casey Helwig Funeral Home. And Michael G. Kirsch from Rexville. Michael Kirsch, 73, of Rexville, died Wednesday, December 17th at his home. Born August 24, 1952, in Buffalo, he was the son of Francis and Helen Eli Kirsch. On October 15, 1999, in Rexville, he married the love of his life, Catherine Kitty Boyle, who survives. A graduate of West Seneca East High School and Canisius University, he was employed by the National Fuel from 1978 until his retirement in 2008. Serving besides his wife, Kitty, are a son, Matthew Vicky Kirsch of Hamburg, a daughter, Abigail John Swanson of Franklinville, three grandchildren, Owen, Abraham, and Naomi, five siblings, Ed Kirsch, Kathy Fulleron, Jean Kirsch, Mark Kim Kirsch, and Ann Superdudo, and nieces and nephews. In addition to his parents, he was predeceased by a son, Emmett Kirsch, on March 27, 2022. Services will be private, and memorials may be made to the Whitesville Public Library. All right. Oh, my favorite. So here comes a little from Liz Candela. Let's see what she's got to say. Welcoming 2026 with faith and thanks, by Della Moore. 2026, dear reader, who would have imagined? Oh, sure, you younger souls would have imagined it. But there may be souls around my age who may be saying, 2026, wow. Seriously, when I was a kid way back in the 1950s, the idea of this time in the future of 2026 seemed like a Buck Rogers era to me. Dear reader, it is a blessing to be experiencing another year, no matter what shape we may be in. Amen? New year, new resolutions, new promises to brush off those resolutions we made last year and really stick to them this time for sure. I praise God for this new year, this new chance for all of us to live and to share and to make a positive difference in all that we do. When I think of the memories of 2025, I think about the opportunities that have made me grow, the difficulties that helped me grow, and times when God made situations that forced me to step out of my comfort zone. I keep it hid, dear reader. But God has allowed that to happen many, many times. But by the same token, I trusted his process and stepped out on faith. I thank God for the new friends he has brought into my life in 2025 and for all the wonderful friends who are still a huge part of my life. I have lost some very important people of my life, and I know that they are up there with the angels, and that is so comforting. I count my blessings every moment and intend to do better each day of the new year. How can I not? I am so very blessed. Amen? My prayer for 2026 is that we all treat each other as we would like to be treated. Let's pray for and support one another. Help when we can. Pray for this old world of ours. Together we are so, so much better. The words of Tiny Tim. God bless us, everyone. Okay, let's see. Where am I at now? I'm going to go back a little ways here. See, what did I forget? Well, I can do this. From Pope Francis to Charlie Kirk, many deaths in 2025 had a wide impact. The death of Pope Francis brought change to the Catholic Church, which counts 1.4 billion adherents and is now led by the first time by the American Pope. The fatal shooting of conservative Charlie Kirk as he spoke before a crowd horrified many and prompted somber conversations about political violence. And when trafficking victim Virginia Goffal died of suicide, it brought additional scrutiny to the investigations of sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. There were among the noteworthy and influential people who died in 2025, where the deaths themselves had a widespread impact. Here is the roll call of some influential figures who died in 2025. In January, Nancy Lieutenant Colon, 104, the first black woman to join the U.S. Army Nurse Corps after the military was desegregated in the 1940s, retired as a major and was remembered by relatives and friends for quietly breaking down racial barriers during her long military career, January 8th. David Lynch, 78, the filmmaker who celebrated for his uniquely dark and dreamlike vision of such movies like Blue Velvet, Mulholland Drive, and the TV series Twin Peaks, January 16th. Dick Button, 95, he was one of the most accomplished men figure skaters in history and one of his sport's great innovators and promoters, January 30th. In February, Tony Roberts, 85, the versatile Tony Award nominated performer in plays and musicals, appeared in several Woody Allen movies, often as Allen's best friend, February 7th. Gene Hackman, 95, the Oscar-winning actor, who studied portraits ranging from the reluctant heroes to conniving villains and made him one of the industry's most respected and honored performers, February 18th, found dead with his wife, Betsy Arakawa. Roberta Flack, 88, the Grammy-winning singer and pianist, intimate vocal and musical style made her one of the top recording artists of the 70s and an influential performer long after that. In March, Alan Simpson, 93, the former U.S. senator, was a political legend whose quick wit bridged partisan gaps in the years. Sorry about this. Well, before today's political acrimony on March 14th, George Foreman, 76, the fearsome heavyweight boxer, lost the Rumble in the Jungle to Muhammad Ali before his inspiring second and third acts as a 45-year-old champion and a successful business owner, March 21st. Richard Chamberlain, 90, the handsome hero of the 1960s and television series Dr. Kildare, came out as gay 4 decades later and was known as the king of the miniseries for his role in The Thornbirds and Shogun, March 29th. In April, Val Kilmer, 65, the brooding, versatile actor who played fan favorite Iceman in Top Gun, donned a voluminous cape as Batman in Batman Forever and portrayed Jim Morrison in The Doors, died of pneumonia on April 1st. Wink Martindale, 91, the general host of such hit game shows as Gambit and Tic-Tac-Doe, also did one of the first recorded television interviews with the young Elvis Presley, April 15th. Pope Francis, 88, history's first Latin American pontiff, charmed the world with his humble style and concern for poor people, but alienated conservatives with critiques of capitalism and climate change, April 21st. Virginia Giuffre, 41, she accused Britain's Prince Andrew and other influential men of sexually exploiting her as a teenager, trafficked by financier Jeffrey Epstein, an advocate for sex trafficker survivors. After emerging as a central figure in Epstein's downfall, she died by suicide, according to her publicist, April 25th. Ruth Buzzi, 88, she rose in fame of the frumpy and bitter Gladys Umfrey on the groundbreaking sketch comedy series Rowan and Martin Laughin', and made more than 200 television appearances during her 45-year career, May 1st. David H. Souter, 85, a retired Supreme Court justice, was an ascetic bachelor and a New Hampshire Republican who became favorite of liberals during nearly 20 years on the bench on May 8th. George Wendt, 76, an actor who, with an everyman charm, he played the affably barfly Norm on the hits 1980s TV comedy Cheers and performed the Broadway in Art, Hairspray, Elf, May 20th. Charles Rangel, 94, the former New York congressman, was an outspoken, gravelly-voiced Harlem Democrat, spent nearly 5 decades on Capitol Hill and was founding member of the Congressional Black Caucus on May 26. Loretta Swit, 87, she won 2 Emmy Awards playing Major Margaret Houlihan in the demanding head nurse of a Korean War surgical unit on the pioneering hit TV show MASH, May 30th. In June, Sly Stone, 82, the revolutionary musician and dynamic showman, led Sly and the Family Stone, transferring popular music in the 1960s and 70s and beyond with such hits as Everybody's People, Stan, and Family Affair, June 9th. Brian Wilson, 82, the Beach Boys' visionary and fragile Fragile's leader, whose genius for melody, arrangement, and wide-eyed self-expressive inspired Good Vibrations, California Girls, and other summertime anthems, became one of the world's most influential recording artists. June 11th, Bobby Sherman, 81, his winsome smile and shaggy mop top made him into a teen idol in the 60s and 70s with bubblegum pop hits like Little Woman and Julie, Do You Love Me, June 24th. In July, Jimmy Swaggart, 90, the televangelist, amassed an enormous following and multi-million dollar ministry, only to be undone by his penchant for prostitutes on July 1st. Connie Francis, 87, the wholesome pop star's 1950s and 60s hits included Pretty Little Baby and Who's Sorry Now, and later serving as an ironic title for a personnel life filled with heartbreak and tragedy, June 16. Ozzy Osbourne, 76, the gloomy, demon-invoking lead singer of the pioneering band Black Sabbath, became the godfather of heavy metal and of the doddering dad on the reality TV, July 22nd. Hulk Hogan, 71, the mustached, headscarf-wearing, bicep-busting icon of professional wrestling, turned the sport into a massive business and stretched his influence into TV, pop culture, and conservative politics during a long and scandal-plagued second act, July 24th. In August, Lonnie Anderson, 79, she played a struggling radio station's empowered receptionist on the hit TV comedy WKRP in Cincinnati, August 3rd. James Lavelle, 97, the commander of Apollo 13, helped turn a failed moon mission into a triumph of on-the-fly can-do engineering, August 7th. Randy Duke Cunningham, 83, his feats as a U.S. Navy flying ace during the Vietnam War catapulted him to Congress, where the Republicans served with 8 House terms before pleading guilty to accepting $2.4 billion in bribes, August 27th. Graham Greene, 73, a trailblazing indigenous actor, his long career including an Oscar nomination for his portrayal of Kicking Bird in Dancing with the Wolves, September 1st. Charlie Kirk, 31, rising from a teenage conservative campus activist to a Todd podcaster, an ally of President Donald Trump, he was fatally shot during an appearance at a college in Utah on September 10th. Robert Redford, 89, the Hollywood golden boy, became an Oscar winner, director, liberal activist, and godfather for independent cinema under the name of one of his best-loved characters, September 16th. On October, Jane Goodall, 91, the conservatist, was renowned for her groundbreaking chimpanzee field research and globe-spanning environmental advocacy, October 1st. Diane Keaton, 79, the Oscar-winning star's quirky manner and emotional depth enthralled fans in movies including Annie Hall, The Godfather, films, and Father of the Bride, October 11th. June Lockhart, 100, she became the mother figure for a generation of television viewers, whether at home in Lassie or in Lost in Space, on October 23rd. In November, Dick Cheney, 84, the hard-charging conservative, was leading advocate for invading Iraq as one of the most powerful and polarizing vice presidents in U.S. history. Years later, he became a critic and target of President Donald Trump, November 3rd. Paul Tagliabue, 84, he helped bring labor peace and riches to the NFL during the 17 years as commissioner, but was criticized for not taking stronger action on concussions, November 9th. In December, Rob Reiner, 78, the son of the comedy giant who became one himself as preeminent filmmakers of the generation of movies such as The Princess Bride, When Harry Met Sally, and This Is Spinal Tap, he was fatally stabbed along with his wife, Michelle Singer Reiner, in their home on December 14th. Greg Biffle, 55, picked by NASCAR as one of its top 75 drivers in history, the Hall of Fame nominee, was killed in a small jet crash on December 18th. Ben Nighthorse Campbell, 92, the former U.S. Senator and Representative of Colorado, known for his passionate advocacy of Native Americans, died on December 30th. All right, let's see if there's anything in sports. Well, it looks like Bonas, many memories remain at the Bills bid farewell to their longtime home. This Sunday will be the last game in Highmark Stadium. The Sabres are doing really good. Let's see. Do you remember me telling you about the Napoleon girl who was a world-class athlete? Well, they're having a meet and greet. Oh, it's actually today. Sorry. Well, anyway, it was today at 6-8 in the building located on Johnson Street. And it was entitled From Allegheny to Tokyo, Angelina's Odyssey to the World Championships. We'll provide an inside look at Napoleon's journey from Allegheny Limestone Central School to the world track and field stage and allow her to thank the community for its tremendous support along the way. Napoleon was present on the dedication and consistency needed to become a world-class athlete. Discuss her many accomplishments in 2025, which included a third-place steeplechase finish at the NCAA Outdoor Track and Field Championship and an NCAA Cross-Country Championship with North Carolina State, and recount the World Championship performance in Tokyo. She'll also be handing out complimentary signed publicity photos. Well, she did that today. The rest looks like regular sports. I don't see anything local in here at all. They look like, you know, all the usual Bills stuff going on. Let's see if there's anything else that I think you need to know. I don't think so. Let's see. Oh, if you want to buy furniture, Hammond's Furniture Store is having a January clearance sale. It looks like there's chairs and there's couches, lots of stuff. So if you're interested in that, there's that going on. Worth Smith is getting ready for your garden and lawn supplies. That always makes you feel good when you know that that's coming and around. So lawn and garden tools and all kinds of things. Let's see. I think that's all I got for you tonight. So I'm going to be signing off. And it's been a pleasure reading for you today on the first Friday in January of 2026. So again, I wish you all a very happy 2026 and hope all your dreams come true. And so I've been reading today for the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And I've been reading the Olean Times Herald for January 2nd, 2026. So remember, everyone, be kind to one another, kinder than necessary. And have a great week, and I'll be back next Friday. Bye-bye now.